Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Fake the Nation, episode 226.
Hello, hello. This is Fake the Nation, where we talk about news, we talk about politics, and where we take out America's old jeans of democracy. You know, the tight ones from high school that we wore on super cute days? And we put them over our feet, and we take a big breath as we pull them over our hips and find out that democracy still fits, motherfuckers. I am your host, Nagin Farsad, and we did it. We can finally say President-elect Joe Biden. Pew, 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 pew. Today, we're going to talk about that win. We're also going to talk about the future of both parties. And finally, we'll talk about hanging out in the cold, pandemic style. I want to say to listeners, before we really get into it, that there is drilling outside of my building. Thank you. That's just like a delightful feature of this, of today's first post-election podcast or second post-election podcast. Jesus Christ, that first one, because it took a minute for us to know what was going on in life. I cannot believe today's panel. It is exactly the right panel for this exact moment. They have been ordained the most perfect Fake the Nation podcast for today. They are the exhaustive father of three, coming to us live from a closet in his house. He's also a contributing op-ed writer for the New York Times. You've heard him on the show before because he's so fantastic. We love him so much. You guys, it's Wajahat Ali. Hey, Waj.
Hey, hey, thanks for having me.
Also joining us on the show for the very first time, she's the host of the podcast Full Release, but you know, that's not really the reason you might know her. You might know her because she's a fucking legend, ladies and gentlemen, icon to me and many others out there in the world. She's the host of Full Frontal. It is Samantha Bee. Hey,
hello.
Samantha Bee.
Hi, I'm so excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
God, I'm in love with you both right now. And I also just want to tell you, the two of you, that topic number one, we're going to like focus on Biden mostly, and then we'll save all the lack of concession speeches for topic number two.
Great.
So if you find yourself veering in there, I might pull you back. Mm-hmm. All right, here we go. Let's get into it with topic number one. So we won the shit out of this election. And before you talk about the Senate and the losses on the House and blah, 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 my point is democracy still held. And so my first question to you guys is just a real softball. How does this make you feel?
Oh,
I felt that in my bones.
God. I can't even tell. I felt like a physical when they gave their speech on that stage Saturday night. I felt that my undercarriage, like I literally felt it relax for the first time. I don't know how long I was holding all of that tension down there, but my uterus just went, oh, like it just unfurled a little bit.
Oh, absolutely. You know what's weird is that in terms of just like physical reactions is that in the days since Saturday, I keep feeling like I need to be nervous. And yeah, there are reasons that we can still be nervous or whatever, and we'll talk about those later. But just the overriding thing of like, I don't need to feel that level of nervous all the time anymore. And I keep stopping to like remind myself that we live in a hostile environment. And then I'm like, oh, wait, we don't necessarily, you know what I mean? So my body is still, you know, it's still shaking, you know what I mean? From what has happened, it still hasn't like calmed down the trauma of the last 4 years.
That's because it's trauma. I think people are underestimating how much trauma we have experienced the past 4 years. I mean, I've had friends in the State Department who to this day were like, I don't know if he won. I'm like, just freaking enjoy this. Let it go. Yeah. Exhale. And it's all symptoms of trauma, right? Is it real? Something bad's going to happen. He's going to rig it. It's fixed. It can't happen. Not in America. Not after the past 4 years, after we elected this vulgarian, this racist, and 7 more million Americans went for him this time. And I feel like most of us, I was saying this, I was very confident on Twitter. I don't know if you were following me. I was this delusional optimist. I'm like, he's got it. Tuesday night, I looked at the ballots. I was talking to organizers on the ground. I'm like, he's got this. He's going to flip five states. And they're like, Waj, you're crazy. You Muslims are insane. Go pray again. Get off Twitter. But I feel like it's okay to experience joy right now. I think we have to give people permission to exhale.
We're so used to not experiencing it. You know?
We're holding so much. And also we're in a pandemic. So we're holding that too. Like we're confined and you can't hug anyone, even though like I, by mistake, hugged someone on Sunday.
And we're spread the corona.
It's not a lot. Yes. And now we I just have a simple 103 fever. It's great. But I definitely, we were like, I have to.
No, it's funny because our official t-shirt for Fake the Nation said we're only doing optimism. So that was our merch. And that's how we've been approaching this election. But I do have to say, like, on the actual election night, I was rather ridiculously bless John Fugelsang, host, regular to Fake the Nation and a Sirius XM host. He had me on his panel with Dan Rather. And so we were doing election night, me and Dan Rather style. And it's funny to me, first of all, that producers were like, who should we pair with Dan Rather? Should it be that garbage comedian Nagin Farsad? Let's do that. And so that's kind of what the... But Dan Rather was like the picture of just a man who had his shit together. You know, he looked, you know, the consummate journalist, the gravitas, the authority, all of that. He was exuding it, the calm. And I'm just like on this, and it was being live streamed, of course. So I'm just there just schwitzing and like heavy breathing. And I looked like an insane person next to Dan Rather, was really able to keep it together because even though I was optimistic, it was hard. And so the joy and the revelry of Saturday was just such a release. Let's talk a little bit about the speeches they gave Saturday night. Sambi, what did you make of those speeches? What kind of chord did they strike?
I don't remember a thing about them, actually. I don't remember any. I couldn't give you any specific information about what was conveyed in those speeches. It was more of a feeling than... I didn't like take it down and go, that's going to be interesting. I just was trying to feel this historic moment. And I really think Kamala is so great. And then having Joe Biden speak, he just sounded like a human person who had it together and he was calming. I felt calm. And I don't pretend to be a person who thinks that all of our problems are, we have many mountains to climb, mountains and mountains to climb, as we always do and always will. But just to feel like some grown-ups are going to take over now, some grown-ups who believe in science, like even that alone feels like such a gift.
Real
like
that's right.
Even that they have smart friends and smart and the ability to identify intelligence and bring that into their world is just, it makes my heart swell.
The bar is so low.
Literally, listeners don't know this, but Sambi is holding her heart right now because it is swelling so much.
I'm trying to keep it in my chest.
Before they come and take it away.
Yes.
Lodge, what'd you think of the speeches?
I like the speeches. I actually was paying attention through the joy. And I feel like just a quick comment on the joy. If you remember Saturday, people spontaneously came out of their cars and celebrated like it was the end of World War II. I've seen that footage only during the end of wars or the end of like authoritarian regimes. You can't even script that. You can't even force people to do that.
Or like a quinceañera that's gone out of control.
The best, but then otherwise, best one. Like the one that you don't, even if you're not invited, like, come on down. Eat some of this. I mean, I felt it was a global catharsis, right? And then you see the manifestation of that hope on stage. You see Kamala Harris, the daughter of an Indian and Jamaican immigrant, in that power suit honoring Clinton and suffragists, who gave a presidential speech, and Biden gave her the space and the time to address the nation. Mm-hmm. I told my daughter, who's Nuseba, she's four, I've been making her watch like Kamala each and every single time. Even my son, I said, this is the first female VP. She's brown like you. She's the daughter of immigrants. I'm the son of immigrants. Just watch. This is the first time it's happening. And kids are very sharp. Like, they get it. To the point where kids have like the sixth sense where they can like sense evil and like the bad kidnapper man. My son goes, Baba, Trump is bad. I'm like, yes, he is bad. And he saw Biden. He goes, Biden's good. He won. That's good. And so when you saw Biden, you saw a calming statesman who was decent, who valued science, who valued facts, democracy, and made the good faith, but naive attempt, but good faith attempt to remind everyone that he is the president of all Americans. And of course, we knew right when he said that, that they would do everything to obstruct him. But the fact that he said it, it's like Sam said, it just settles you. It's a part of that release, that catharsis that I think we have earned as Americans.
Yes.
Absolutely. And then I also just want to say, you know, like listeners know, I have a baby and she is an Iranian American Muslim, but also African American, which is a sideways version of Kamala Harris. Yeah. And I think like for me, like, because I thought after Hillary Clinton that maybe in my lifetime we wouldn't see a woman on that stage, you know? Like, yeah. I don't know, Sam, if you had that, like, visceral fear of, like, oh, this might not happen in my lifetime.
And I very much felt like we would have, if we did have a woman, it would be the wrong woman.
Yes, yes. I thought we were going to Margaret Thatcher the shit out
very
of this
bad version
yes.
of this. Yes. yes.
Nikki Haley.
Yeah, well, that's, I mean, and it could still, we right. don't, you sure. know, but yeah, that those were exactly my feelings. And so that was just on a personal front to like be able to see that a version of my daughter like mm-hmm. on the stage was really, really amazing. And then so we've now, you know, we've been sitting with President-elect for a few days. There's been some news that's come out. He's had some opportunities to respond presidentially. You know, so for example, Pfizer came out with really good news about the trial of their vaccine. Shit's looking good. You know, this could be fast-tracked by the FDA, et cetera. Biden came out and responded like, I don't know what you thought of his responses, but I thought that it was, it felt very reasonable. Like, yes, this is good news, but we still have to wear masks. Like, essentially, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Sam, how did you, I'll mention he was asked about who his Secretary of Education might be. Turns out he's gonna hire someone that has experience in education.
Wait, wow. An educator? Are you sure that's reasonable?
Who doesn't shit on public schools that educate 90% of our kids?
I was gonna hire the owner of multiple polo teams just because I don't know, seem like my people. It's been very nice to see him not go down weird rabbit holes too. Like, it makes me feel calm that he's having a steady approach to all of this, like the nonsense about these legal battles with the ballots and stuff, that he's very much like, this is very silly. We're just moving forward.
Yes.
We don't need him to concede. It's fine. It's whatever. We're just moving forward. We're moving forward. It's like not getting involved in all the nonsense. It just calms me, I feel like
there's
a star, a North Star.
Yes, it's very, this is the word, I think, rise above-y.
Yes. Yes.
Which is like what we've just ever wanted, is for a leader to rise above the fray.
Everybody else can go down the rabbit holes.
Yeah,
everybody else go down
that's
those.
That's cute. You want to look at your Twitters or whatever. Adorable.
Sure.
Rise above is the SAT word, I think, that we all failed. he's presidential. He's an adult. And I think we've mentioned this before, but we kind of forget because there's so much chaos that we're living in the middle of a once-in-a-lifetime pandemic that has killed over 235,000 Americans. And if you look at the map right now as we're recording this podcast, the entire map of America is red. Red not for Republican, but red as a hotspot. Mm-hmm. And they're saying that over the next 3 months during the winter, we're going to see the third surge
and it's just going to be death. America is just going to be witnessing death. I mean, if you look at South Dakota right now, where Republican Governor Kristi Noem, her response to COVID, I don't know if you've seen the video, is insane. And it's in September, she put it on Twitter. She killed a bird. She goes, this is how we handle COVID. We shoot it with a shotgun. And now South Dakota is completely red. The poor South Dakotans are infected. And to have an adult in the room that respects science, like, it's a parent. Like, you have a kid with a temper tantrum who always flings poo around the room, and you kind of know he always will. You're like, let him fling his poo. Eventually, he'll settle down. We, the adults, are moving forward. We respect science. We're going to wear a mask. He wore a mask again yesterday. Kamala wore it yesterday. And I think why we'll have so much relief is once he, knock on wood, inshallah, as we say, takes the presidency on January 20th, literally that administration is going to save lives. Literally. I'm using it like how we used it in the 90s.
Straight up. Because and Sam, what do you think of the talk of a national mask mandate from Biden?
I don't know why. Well, we should have one. I'm into mandates. I'm Canadian. Like, we do. Even Canada doesn't have a national mask mandate. And that is surprising to me. We're just like primed up there. And there's not that many of us.
Right.
There should be one. And I don't know why there isn't. We should have that. I don't know what will happen with that. But certainly, minimally, the fact that the White House, I think they're mandating them across all federal agencies, like minimally, that's all I know for now. But I'm into a federal mask mandate. I think it absolutely provably saves lives. It's great. It would be great.
And I think, you know, especially with like kind of success we've seen in New York, where masks are so culturally accepted.
Yes.
You know, it feels like it's not, it is also, you know, it is the very definition of not a big deal also. Like, just wear one. It's not a big deal.
Not a big deal.
But I feel like, don't you feel like when the leader of the country does it, it just automatically, it sets the tone. And people are like, oh, our president's wearing a mask. I'll do that. And on the flip side, oh, our president is calling Mexicans rapists and criminals and not denouncing white supremacy and not wearing a mask. That means it's okay.
It's nice to normalize something that's actually normal.
Yeah.
Right.
That feels good. That feels where we do. We've earned this. We deserve this.
All right. Well, you know what? That's a great note to end on. We're going to move on to the next topic, which is going to be about things that aren't normal. But first, let's hear from our sponsors. And then when we come back, we'll keep talking at you. Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Folks, I feel like I've mentioned this before, but I tried other services that I was displeased with. And then a neighbor of mine was trying Factor. I had pulled them aside in the hallway and I was like, what are you feeling about this Factor? And they were like, it is delicious. You should definitely do it. So then me and my husband did it and we loved it. They are chef-prepared meals that arrive to your door, and then in 2 minutes, you could be eating them. Like, it's so simple, and they're actually delicious. And for people like me who just sometimes, my schedule can be so maniacal between traveling in different cities and, you know, doing stand-up gigs. It's like I just don't have a typical schedule where I can plan, set aside time for cooking and all that stuff. So something like Factor really helps for me. The other thing that I love to do is try not to eat carbs. So they have a keto option, which is fantastic. It's super delicious. They use premium ingredients. You can get stuff with like filet mignon and shrimp and truffle butter and broccolini and asparagus, right? Like real ingredients. They're no fuss, no mess meals. They eliminate the hassle of having to prep.
They're tailored to your schedule. You can customize your weekly meals with flexibility. You can pause or reschedule. I've actually done that. I've both paused and rescheduled. Factor is basically your solution for fast premium meals without the need for cooking. We're celebrating Earth Day all month long, and look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for the lowest carbon footprint meals. So here's what I think you should do. I think you should head to factormeals.com/fakethenation50 and use the code fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month. That's code fakethenation50 at factormeals.com/fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. I am the type of person that has subscribed to things and I have forgotten about those things. I have paid twice for a children's educational app, and I didn't know that I was paying twice for several months. Until that is, I discovered Rocket Money, and because I use Rocket Money, it just showed up all these things. The thing that I was paying twice for that made me incredibly angry, thank God Rocket Money ended that for me. It also cancels the subscription for you, so you don't have to like go through the hassle of going to that site and figuring out how to cancel. They actually make canceling very difficult. I don't know if any of you have had the experience, but I have been on a roundabout 8 exit nightmare trying to unsubscribe to something before. Rocket Money eliminates that hassle. It also alerts you to an increase in subscription price. And this is something Rocket Money did for me. It negotiates a lower price for something you already subscribed to. So like for my cable bill, it got me a lower price. And I was very happy about that. Nearly 75% of people have subscriptions that they've forgotten about, which makes me feel better because I'm one of them. But it makes me feel terrible because what are we doing? Losing that money. I don't want to waste that money. And I know you don't want to waste that money. If you struggle with these kinds of purchases, if you struggle with finances in general, Rocket Money will help you with the budgeting, help you track your expenses, help you, like I said, cancel those unwanted subscriptions. It's a personal finance app that finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions. It monitors your spending. It helps you lower your bills so you can get back to saving. I mean, me and my husband have been on the warpath, and Rocket Money has been a really big part of that. It has over 5 million users with over $500 million in canceled subscriptions. The average member has saved up to $740 a year using the app's features, which is, I mean, that tracks for me. So stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions. Go to rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Again, that's rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Save the money at rocketmoney.com/fakethenation.
This HeadGum podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers, aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, well.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt.
Mm-hmm.
So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
And we are back, and we're ready for topic number two. So
we're still very early days into detoxing from Trumpism's hold over the news. I mean, I honestly look forward to never talking about him ever again. But he still hasn't conceded. So it's sort of like we still have to do that thing where we're just like keep refreshing the news. And I don't know. I personally need some sort of like a news methadone to like fucking get over this OxyContin presidency that I've been on. But here's my question for you. Trump hasn't conceded, and the Republican Party is sort of standing by him. People like Mitch McConnell are all like, congratulations when it comes to the House and Senate wins, but then claim that the top half of that same ballot may be fraudulent, mm-hmm. right? So what's the GOP, what's this look that the GOP is wearing? How is it landing with you?
It's very bad. It's a very bad look. It's landing very poorly. But will it matter in the long run? I don't think so. We mostly have the attention span of goldfish. So I do worry about that. It's just unbelievable.
I mean, it's unbelievable, and it does feel, I mean, it also just feels like a little bit of a stage play, mm-hmm. you know? I mean, everybody knows Mitch McConnell's not a lunatic. Like, everybody knows, and then they're just all doing this really, like, community theater version mm-hmm. Of a stage play. To help coddle the frayed ego of one popular vote losing minority president, one term minority president, Donnie Twimp. Mm-hmm. Waj, are you worried about the GOP doing this, or what do you think?
I think I'm less surprised because along with others, we called it 2 years ago and we were mocked and ridiculed because we took Trump literally and seriously, including his racism. And I said he won't concede and he will say it's a fraudulent election. And it's theater. I said theater as well, but I said it's dangerous theater because mm-hmm. he will try to steal it if he can. Number one, that's why we have to be vigilant. Number two, they're trying to steal money actively through mm-hmm. this process. Number three, they are trying to cover their tracks of malfeasance. Number four, they're riling their base. And this is what's most damaging, is that the Republican Party, in my opinion, is now an extremist, counter-majoritarian party that literally has elected a QAnon supporter, Marjorie Taylor Greene, to the House. An anti-Semite and QAnon supporter is now in the House. And so what they're going to do is rile up their base, which is going to weaken Biden's presidency because about 70 to 80% of their base is going to be like, illegitimate. And so when this president comes in, President Biden, and literally tries to save lives, they have an amazing base that does not believe in anything. And when Biden says this vaccine is solid, use it, they're like, meh, deep state conspiracy. When Biden says, hey, the election is solid, they're like, fraud. And that's why I always say, and people don't like hearing this, who ultimately won in 2016? Putin. Because all he wanted to do at the end of the day was weaken U.S. democracy and exploit our racial and religious tensions. And that's where we have right now.
Yes. Now, okay.
Like, okay. I don't follow up question. What do we do?
Follow up question. Who's going to hold me?
I took it to like a dark detour. All of a sudden, it was like a comedy and became like a horror slasher movie.
But I really like transport yourselves to January 21st, right? And I mean, because I do think every lawsuit has been thrown out. They just don't have any proof. Hmm. It's hard to steal an election when you don't have a shred of something to hang it on, right? So, you know, there are no hanging chads. It's like there's none of that for them to do. So I think that we will see the inauguration of Joe Biden. Da, da, da,
yes.
Knock on wood. Oh my God. I'm just so superstitious right now. What is Trumpism? Is it still like without Trump in office, will these people still be kissing his ass? Like I get that he's going to be still the most famous Republican, but he's going to be just a guy who lives in Florida.
I don't know what is next for him, but those people are not going away.
Right.
Are they going under? Will they be a little more
I doubt it. They're going to be in our faces for a very long time.
That's right.
If not forever. And their numbers are growing. Like, I don't know. I don't have a solution for you here. They scare me.
What is it?
They're so divorced from reality. They're
divorced from reality.
I don't know how to begin.
What is their, I guess, and this is my just straight up dumb question. What do they want? Like, I don't understand what they're after specifically. I mean, it, beyond a border wall, like, what was the policy thing that Trumpism is? I still, I'm not, you know, okay, no immigrants and a border wall? Is that?
No, that's not a dumb question. That's not a dumb question. Trumpism will outlast Trump. It is the manifestation of a 50-plus year Republican policy, the Southern Strategy, that chased white anxiety during the Civil Rights Act, that has manufactured white anxiety into a populist movement. Trump, I always say, was the inevitable Frankenstein. The difference between Trump and others was Frankenstein escaped the lab and turned on the monsters, the masters, right? Trumpism will outlast, and I think the reason why it will outlast predominantly is because you have a Republican Party that knows what it's doing is counterproductive to democracy, but they cater to the base. Example this week. Number two, you have a right-wing ecosystem that pummels out disinformation that leaks out into the mainstream. So Sam can do show after show after show, but she's not reaching a third of that base, which are, you know, average Americans who literally believe you, me, and Nagin are part of a global conspiracy that not only kidnaps children, but we eat them also. And we have a weekly quota, the QAnon conspiracy. And so when you ask, what do they want, Nagin? This is what they want. They believe they are the besieged minority and that the rest of us are attacking them, their identity, and their culture. It's fight or flight. And as such, the ends justify the means. Trump is flawed, but he's my flawed defender. And so in order to protect my identity and my culture and my family from you, who literally will steal my child and eat it, I will do whatever it takes. I will give up democracy. I'll never give up my identity and ideology, which is why we're in for a long fight.
So, this is so, I know, I just learned today, actually, and I don't know why I didn't know this, because I observe social media, obviously, but I don't participate in it all that often. I don't have any notifications on my all of that.
Smart.
I just try to stay away from it. But I learned today, or was told, that there are people on my staff who have trauma from mediating our comments and like who actually go through all of that material, and they really are psychologically traumatized by it. And I don't see any of that because they're there actually because of them and as this firewall. And I didn't even think to be appreciative of that horrible work. But now I think better of it. But there is so much out there. Like, I did phone banking for Biden.
Yeah.
You know? And so many times you answer the phone, someone answers the phone and you're like, hi, I'm Sam, and I'm calling you from the Osceola County Democrats, and they're like, Joe Biden is a pedophile who drinks children's blood.
There
hang
you go.
Up. And you're like,
there you go.
Wow, a lot, like a lot more than you want to hear. And you're like, oh, what is going on in that household?
That's so. And I mean, I think okay, so there's a couple of things. QAnon, I think, is one side of the story. I mean, I definitely, I'm just baffled by how popular it became. And I'm also baffled by how unwilling we are to just completely and utterly regulate social media the way we have regulated other media. And that's something that, like, I think even Republicans could get on board. Can we peel off a Mitt Romney and a Susan Collins and a Lisa Murkowski to be like, yes, that evil should be controlled? I believe that we can, and I'm optimistic about that. So social, like, controlling social media is one thing when it comes to those crazy fucking insane conspiracy theories.
But it's like it's like our information systems are to completely fracture. Like,
yeah,
there's no interplay.
Because we used to just have Dan Rather. telling us things that were true. Yes.
That right? That's right.
You know, and we don't have that anymore. Mm-hmm. And it's really traumatizing. I think, and it's led to this dispersed information universe where some people are getting good information, other people are getting average information, other people are getting absolutely shit information. But here's a question for me. Here's a question about Trump, though, in particular, which is like, do you guys remember that moment in 2016 where Rubio tried on a Trumpism and like talked about Donald Trump's hands or whatever?
His fingers, right. Yes.
Fingers. Yeah. Basically saying that he had a small dick and he does, but like it didn't wear well on Rubio. Like people sort of laughed him out of the room because that kind of language doesn't fit everybody, especially if you're not a reality TV star, you know, a bombastic human being from the 70s onward, right? Like Donnie had been working out that shtick for many decades before we got it on the very national, international stage. Right. Do you think Republicans are going to try and do that with the language and the disgustingness? Because to me, I think that was that's why he lost the election. He lost the election because suburban voters who may otherwise have voted for Republicans and who otherwise did vote for Republicans down ballot were like, that stuff, I can't take it anymore. So what do you think about that part of Trumpism?
I think he would have won again if he hadn't gotten coronavirus. Like, right. I think he would have won. I think he was really cruising to a victory. Like, I don't... People rejected him in the way that I was really hoping that they would. So I don't know. I mean, that's just my own personal feeling.
My friend said if someone didn't accidentally eat a bat in China, we would have President Trump again. Coronavirus. I mean, Joe Biden would have won the popular vote just like Clinton won. But we have a vestige of slavery called the Electoral College that hijacks and forfeits the popular vote. I agree with that. Without coronavirus, I think he would have won through the Electoral College. To answer your question, I'll give you a cynical take, but then a positive take. Trumpism works. Why will Republicans abandon it when it works and their base loves it? And you saw McSally, of all people, become ugly. You saw Graham completely turn. What I've always said is that once Trump's leaves...
But it didn't work for McSally.
Well, it didn't work for her, but I'm on a national level. Once Trump leaves, my fear was always this. A more refined version of Trump, more slick, a little bit more friendly, less prone to gaffes, less prone to self-destruction. Yeah. Well, I mean, Ivanka's too blue blood. Don Jr., if he wasn't like cracked out,
Don,
a non-cracked out version of Don Jr. will win. And the positive here, though, is I still think, this is the optimist for me. If you go back to theater, I said, I think we're witnessing Orange Julius Caesar. Maybe by next week we'll see Act Two. Because once he loses the power of the presidency, he's made so many enemies, and he's done so much like toxic criminal shit. Once all this stuff comes out and he's older and he's post-COVID and he's obese, I think he'll weaken. And he will not be as strong. He won't have as strong as a hold. But the next Trump, the more refined, polished, younger, maybe the female version of Trump.
Right.
That's who I'm afraid of. Because it worked.
All right, but you know what? I just want to say.
But my T-shirt says optimism. My T-shirt. Get your T-shirts on.
Rise above me. No, the theme
is
rise above
me. I want to say you're really focused on what the next version of Trump is going to be, and I also am really focused on who is going to energize people the way Obama did, and maybe that's Kamala, right?
Right.
And that's something that we have to look forward to. Sometimes we forget that we have an arsenal of tools in our bag, right? Our bag is fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Our bag. Mm-hmm. But it is, right? Like, Oprah's in there. You know what I mean? Beyonce is in that bag. So, like, let's not forget all of the tools that we have to bring to the table because they can be there. I think they're more powerful than a fucking website that talks about pedophilia wrongly, you know? And that ultimately, I think, is the case. So that's my optimistic take.
No, but Nikki, can I say, I agree with you completely. Yeah. Only if Democrats take advantage of it, right? So I've said, it shows you my age. I'm going to do a 90s reference, an exquisite 90s reference.
Dems need to stop chasing Amy and Karen and start chasing Stacey Abrams, right? We've centered whiteness.
Right.
We've centered whiteness to the point where Hillary Clinton's running mate in 2016, my wife forgot. It's Tim Kaine. Why? Because like maybe some whites in the Rust Belt will like Tim Kaine. No one did. And Stacey Abrams comes out and says, I'm your base, people of color. I'm going to mobilize. Yeah. I'm going to bring a multicultural base. I'm going to get out the vote. I'm going to get you Milwaukee, Detroit, Atlanta, and Latinos and Navajo voters are going to get you Maricopa. And so if Democrats follow Stacey Abrams' lead and center around their base and actually get out those votes, I agree with you. They can run the tables if they do that.
Sam Beatty, you have a final word here on the future of the GOP, the future of the Democratic Party.
Listen, my mantra, I wrote it, it's in my phone right now. Like, I wrote it down for myself today. I was like, you know what? And I'm going to tell everybody at work. So I'll do it now. I was like, for the next couple of weeks, like for the next foreseeable future, let's just all adopt the attitude. What would Stacey Abrams do or say?
Yeah.
And let's not vary from that. Let's just stay on
course. And that's what we do and say. Yeah.
That's what we do. That's what we say. I'm on her program for the rest of eternity.
I love that. That's fantastic. All right, folks, tell me, what is your mantra in this post-election period, this lame duck session? How are you feeling? Hit me up on all of the social medias that I hate. Okay, let's move on to topic number three. So it'll be winter eventually. I mean, it's still in the 70s in New York, so we haven't gotten much of a fall. But technically, to quote Game of Thrones, winter is coming. And outdoor hangs have been my personal lifeline. Mm. So what's the plan now that we're going into pandemic winter edition? Do you feel a nervousness about your social outlook?
Yes, I'm scared. I'm really scared. I liked outdoor life. Oh, I appreciated it. I like to be able to go outside. I'm scared. I'm really scared. And my kids are in the public school system. And so that's another level of fear. I feel like we're in New York City right now, really cruising toward a reality in which the public schools go offline or go online fully really soon. I don't know if it's actually going to happen. They've been great. Our schools have been great, but yeah, that's going to be hard. You know, it's really, really challenging. And
right. It's like the public schools have been great and they're not a vector of disease, according to studies, but there are numbers at which the governor, that trigger a closing, even if it's not because of the public school, right? Yes. So that's, you know, where we're at. Mm-hmm. We read a piece in the New York Times called Why You Should Brave the Bad Weather. And I'm just going to quote from it. I forgot the name of the writer. I'm a terrible person. But they write, take it from someone who grew up in Northern England. Terrible weather does not mean you don't get to socialize outdoors. Later, they write, the key to British imperturbability lies in not expecting your time outdoors to be especially warm or dry in the first place. Mm-hmm. And I love this. I've actually done two rainy hangs with some friends. We were under like a nice outdoor, you know, the restaurant awning deals that they have set up all over the great streets of New York. Mm-hmm. And in both cases, we all patted ourselves on the back for hanging out in the rain because it was still really fun. And it was ultimately, it was fine. It wasn't that wet. We were under a thing. It was just kind of like, it's a little cold. It's a little rainy. And so I think there's a world where we can kind of do this. Like, let's do this. Yes. Raj, how are you feeling about the cold?
So we basically have to become British and passive aggressive and just mm-hmm. murder our emotions for the next 4 months. I feel good about it. Like I was saying before, you know, I was telling you about my daughter. I mean, we had to deal with her cancer last year. And then right when she was cancer free, literally the next week, we went into lockdown. So my family in particular, in a strange way, and I say this with kind of a tongue in cheek, enjoying the dark humor of it all, was prepped for lockdown. And you look back on it now a year later and I'm like, was it worth it? Well, yeah, we saved her life because she's immunocompromised. And you find a way to live and you find a way to be creative and you do things inside. Or like you said, you go outside with your friends and social distance. But we're in a third wave where literally the entire U.S. map is red with virus. And we have.
And by the way, it's just so that we don't feel alone. So is Europe.
Yep. So is Europe. I mean, and they're locking down again. Look at France. My friends in France are like, oh, we thought we beat this, man. And I feel like we have to say this. Do we want to survive until the summer? Do we want our loved ones to be around in the summer? If that means for 3 months, we wear masks, we socialize only outside, and we just kind of recalibrate and be a bit creative, is it worth it? And literally, it might be worth 150,000 American lives. And so this is why I say, and I, you know, the weight of it, I think sometimes, you know, there's so many crises, we forget the weight of 235,000 Americans who have died. Mm-hmm. That's no joke. Just let that like number sit with you. And so if with this third wave, if we do what Trump told us to do, literally he's leading us to slaughter. And I'll say the final thing is Republican governors such as DeSantis and all Trump followers have given up on doing anything on the virus. Mark Meadows, who has COVID, admitted it.
Yeah.
And what they want is herd immunity, or as Trump calls it, herd mentality, which means let, he literally said that. He literally, remember that? He goes, herd mentality, whatever. But that means that's 8 million people dead. And so the pro-life party is fine with 8 million people dying. I'm not. Mm-hmm. 3 months, suck it up, be creative, wear the mask, meet outside,
well,
get to the
Sam,
spring.
You're from Canada, right? Don't you guys have on the call?
Listen, we will be fine. I definitely have put an eye to it because we will go outside and you have to go out.
You
gotta
crazy go outside.
If you don't go outside.
Yeah.
We have friends who moved to Maine, okay? And they moved to Maine and they were like, it's so dark and it's cold all the time. Like, it's just so much colder, faster, and it's longer. And a piece of advice that they got when they moved to Maine for Mainers was embrace winter.
Right.
Like, get to love the cold.
Yeah.
And you'll be fine here. Because if you don't, you will be depressed. You will
the
be in a
time.
State of depression
right.
the whole time. Like, so I think we just embrace winter. I got new jackets that will keep us in the cold for longer. I think we'll just get into it. But like, further to your point, you know, so many people, over 200,000 people dead, but so many more people than that are having the lingering effects of this.
Right.
And there are people who will never really fully recover. So there's countless others in addition to all the people who perished. So it's absolutely, it's our duty. What they need to do, in the opinion of me and my family, is really rebrand the idea of a mask mandate and call it like a patriotic, like America face coverings, patriot covers, or just like freedom fries it a little bit so that we all feel like patriots for wearing our masks.
No, that's right. That's a smart point.
We are patriots. Yeah. We're like looking out for people around us, protecting them from our own disease. That's nice, but preventing their disease from coming into it's fucking patriotic.
Rebrand.
I mean, yeah,
message.
I think obviously the failure of the marketing of coronavirus and how to prevent it was because we didn't have any. You know, if this had been the Obama administration or the Biden administration, there would have been that, you know, patriotic face covering. They would have figured out, you know, get your face mask and your fucking butt plugs in the flag edition, and it would have made it
yes
red, white, and blue.
It would have been more fun. It would have been more, it would have just been more spirited. Like, this doesn't have, this patriotism does not have to be so dour. You know
no.
what I mean? Like, being called to duty shouldn't just fill you with dread and horribleness, right?
No.
Like, it should feel like I am helping my community. This is great. You know, there's people that still cheer at 7 p.m. for essential workers every night in New York City. And we're months later and they come out with their pots and pans. You know what I mean? And that is like the kind of enthusiasm I feel like. I love that enthusiasm. I imagine they had that during World War II, and we just have lost the ability to feel enthusiasm in that way.
Exactly. Get everybody in the war effort. It's a war on a virus. We fucking love war here.
Yeah.
Can't we just make it a war on a pandemic instead of an actual war?
Yes, we do fucking love war over here. Oh, Jesus Christ. Okay, let's talk a little bit about the holidays and kind of still making them special. Mm. Is there anything you guys are doing or thinking about for your holiday experience to be pandemic special?
We are so insular as a family. Like, I've got three kids as well, and we come from such small families. The only thing that's really happening for us, outside of the world as a whole, is that our entire family is across the Canadian border, and that border has been closed since March, I think. So we haven't seen our families for a really long time. That's nothing new here. You know, we've had a travel ban for 4 years, so lots of families aren't seeing their family members, so we can live with it. But that's the biggest challenge for us in the holidays. And so I guess we'll be FaceTiming a lot, but not too much other stuff is really going to change. I guess we're not going out for any dinners. That's for sure.
What are you doing?
Yeah, I mean, Halloween was around the corner. We dressed up our kids. They just felt like having a great time. They wore masks. And then we went outside and social distance. And we got some candy. And it was fine. Eid, we did Eid during lockdown. And we Zoomed our family members, just like Sam. I haven't been able to see my parents or my in-laws. But it was fine. The kids know what's up. They know it's a pandemic. They know it's a virus. You know, Thanksgiving, we'll make some food and we'll Zoom our friends. And that's okay. That's enough. Because like you said, we're all in a once in a lifetime pandemic. We all have to rally. It's a global community effort. And I think if people realize, oh, we're saving our lives and literally helping save our neighbors by doing this, and it's okay. We're in it together. You can empathize together, have joy together, cry together. You know, we're in it together. And the leadership, why it's going to be so important for those people who say both sides. Mike Pence was asked this question about 2 weeks ago, and he said, we're going to do the family. Mother's going to be there, and we're going to have everyone, and we're just going to do everything as normal, as usual, and everyone's going to come together and spread more coronavirus. And so that's not going to be the answer coming from Kamala when she's a leader. And that's what's going to help save lives. Because Kamala's going to be like, social distance, wear a mask, be with your loved ones, be safe. And then people will be like, oh, that's what my leader's telling me to do. I'll do that. Mm-hmm. That's okay.
Can I say the one thing that I'm really thinking about for the holidays is in that spirit of being a good patriot is I'm still buying gifts for everybody, but I am aggressively and only buying those gifts from local places.
Oh, that's good for you.
This is the time when businesses need the help. There's a bunch of businesses that made it this far, that managed not to close, and here we are in November, and we need to get them over the hump of this winter and this early spring. And so I think one thing that I would just beg, and you know, listeners have heard me talk about, don't fucking give money to Amazon. I fucking rail against Amazon constantly. I will continue to rail against Amazon. They don't need any more of your hard-earned money, but you know who really could use it? Who could really use it is like the toy store dinosaur on 9th Street in my neighborhood. There's like gift shops, there's clothing stores, there's all these little storefronts that are run by moms and pops. And so one dorky thing I'm doing is I'm putting together a list of my neighborhood. I'm sharing it with all of my neighbors and I'm posting it in my building.
Great.
Because what is the dorky little thing that you can do to get people to help save those businesses? Also, a great gift is a gift certificate from the local restaurant that you also want to save.
This is great. Oh, I want to amplify what you're saying right now. This is really a great message, and I'm going to put that in my own noodle and think about ways to do that.
Put it in your noodle. Good. Yes. Everyone, put it in your, let's put it in our collective noodles.
But what you've done is, I mean, what you have done, what other people have replicated has literally saved local towns and businesses the past year. A deliberate, conscientious effort to buy local and help support local businesses, pay that little extra dollar for the book or, you know, go to the restaurant just to help out. That's what saved small towns all across America because they haven't gotten that stimulus package from the government.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then let's just get them to that hump where Joe and Kamala can get in there, whip up some votes, and get a stimulus package to Americans, get a small business package to small businesses. There is a will even with Republican senators to do that. So I feel like that's in our future, but they need help. So tell me, folks, what you guys are doing for your holidays, how you're still going to make it special, what local businesses you're supporting. Tweet them at me. I will retweet them. I love supporting local businesses, even though they're not wherever the fuck they are. Folks, thank you so much for joining me. That is the end of the show. How do you feel?
Great.
I feel great.
I feel revitalized.
Yes.
Actually, that was
That's
very
what we
pleasant.
Like to hear.
And, very much a pleasure.
I hope people feel joy still. Feel joy, yep, and be optimistic despite everything we've discussed.
Feel it. Yes. Give yourself permission to enjoy something. Mm-hmm. Fuck. Well, you know what I would love for people to do is I would love for them to be able to follow you and all the stuff you do. Waj, where do they find you?
They'll find me at Wajahat Ali on the Twitters. Unlike Samantha, I actually do respond to people and suffer from all the rage and masochism, but I respond back. So, yeah, but I'm very friendly on social media. If I can ever help anyone, let me know. Or if you want someone to troll, I'm a really good person to troll.
I will troll you. I will take you up on that offer.
Sammy, where do people find you? I mean, I feel like a lot of people know.
At the old Full Frontal and at Full Release, the podcast, and I guess on Twitter at I am Sam B, although my notifications are blocked, so I will not respond to your horrible messages or your pleasant ones. They're both are welcome.
It's like tweeting into the void if you ever just feel
a little bit. Yeah, a little bit.
Awesome. You should definitely be subscribing to Full Release. That is a podcast that should be in your life. You know where to find me and all the things I do. But what I really would like to do is thank the people that make Fake the Nation possible. That is our wonderful producer, Anita Flores, our talented audio engineer, Andy Christens, Gabby Alter wrote our theme music, Lily Fleshler helped out with research, and dear listeners, we love hearing from you. So send us your feedback, topics we should be chatting about, guest ideas you might have. You can leave us a voicemail at 331-901-0005 or drop us a line at comments@fakethenation.com. If you like what you hear, favorite Fake the Nation on Stitcher, follow us on Spotify, subscribe on Apple Podcasts, and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts because it helps people find the show. That is it, and we'll be back in your earballs next week.